Hey, Nate, you want to intro us?
I'm Nate Burgess.
I'm Phil DeLuca.
And we are Commanderin. You want me to do the rest?
Yeah, sure.
Music.
Commanderin.
Thanks for listening. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never ever talk about four banned topics: religion, politics, Hearthstone, and hip-hop. If you like what you hear and want to support the show, go to patreon.com/commanderinmtg and donate to us. Patreon allows you to give back to the creators you appreciate. We are also working on a few ways to give back to our patrons through exclusive offers and gifts. If you donate a buck a show, it helps immensely. And if you donate $10 per show, you get access to all the hosts in our exclusive Facebook chat group.
Dun, dun, dun.
Patroni there also get to contribute to show plans, and they get sneak peeks and exclusive content. Also, check us on YouTube.
That's right. We have a YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we, Nate?
Yep. This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. We're going to talk about the most popular commanders according to the community. To do that, we brought an expert, none other than the wrecker of EDH, the holder of Master Data, Donald Miner.
It's good to be here.
So well, tell us about EDHREC.com.
Sure.
It's good to have you. It's good to have you back on the show, Donald.
Yeah, it's good to be back. So I hope I don't sound cocky, but do people not hear about my website anymore?
Let's pretend that some of our listeners are brand new to the internet.
Brand new to the internet, all right. Well, it's gotten to the point now where I have to, when I go play EDH outside the house, I have to not mention it or people want to talk to me about it. So
yeah.
So yeah, so EDH is a website that helps you figure out what cards you can play, what commanders are available, and helps you improve your decks. And that's basically it. And I think Commander is a very open-ended format with a lot of cards available and a lot of commanders available, a lot of strategies available, where it's kind of overwhelming for people getting into the game. So I think, I aim to make it a good service for new people to the format and continue to be useful over time. That's the plan.
Yeah, it's a wonderful service. Nate and I use it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I use it all the time, too, as a user.
Patron Andrew Bentley, who is at Bent's Mister on Twitter, he wants to know how the idea came about. I'm sure that we have a couple of other listeners who didn't hear our last episode.
Yeah. It started out with me being tired of looking at different deck lists online and trying to figure out like what cards were in common across the multiple deck lists. So I would kind of copy and paste maybe five or six different decks and then see which cards were in common. And I felt it was really manual and annoying. So I wrote some code basically that did this task for me, and I had it running just for myself, just terminal output. There's nothing useful there. And the results that turned actually I thought were pretty good. And I had the crazy idea to make a Reddit bot out of it that would, well, I got kind of irritated with Reddit because people were posting deck lists and just saying like, I need help, and not, and they were missing things like Sol Ring from their deck. So I basically just had the bot watch for deck lists and then respond in a comment about what cards they should be playing. And then over time, I got more data and I figured out how to make the results better. And then it eventually built the website with the help of some folks. And now we're here a few years later, and the website's the main thing, and that's what we're working on. So
yeah.
So that's kind of, kind of humble roots, I guess, of something I thought would be useful as an EDH player. And then, it's bigger than me now. And that's kind of scary at the same time. So.
Andy also wants to know how much time you dedicate, or I guess the team now dedicates to the site.
Yeah. So this has changed recently. So there's now three major players here. So there's myself, and then there's this guy, David, who's a software engineer, and he's probably putting the most work into it right now. And then we have Jason Alt, who recently came on to help us with the content side of the website and some community things that we have going on. You know, I actually saw this question ahead of time, and I had a really hard time figuring out how I was going to answer this because I guess the best way of putting it is it's very bursty. So I don't sit down for 3 weeks every week and work on it. Sometimes I could go 3 weeks without ever touching it. But every now and then we have to spend like a few days working on it. So the biggest ones are around sets releases. So the most recent one that was released was Commander 16, and this was a ton of work. So partners was a big deal. We had actually had to change basically the entire back end and front end. There were so many changes that needed to be made where David effectively worked on it for 2 weeks straight, like maybe 80 hours, and I probably put in maybe 30 or 40 hours in the past couple months. After partners, I think both David and I were kind of burnt out. So, you know, we're putting in maybe 1 or 2 hours here and there when we notice something's wrong and fixing something. So actually, you know, we had a bunch of cool features that we had planned for the end of the year, and none of them got done because we ended up working on partners instead.
Wow.
So I guess what I'm saying is it's very dependent. Like Meld, for example, it was a decent amount of work to get that in there. So every set kind of brings something new that we have to fix, which is, you know, fun. I'm not trying to complain, but anyways, week to week, maybe an hour or two, David's putting in a few hours too, and we fix issues as they come up. And then around the time sets come in, then it's a decent amount of work sometimes.
Yeah. I remember your tweet when partners came out and, you were quite upset, shall we say. I actually cannot repeat your tweet here.
Yeah. I remember seeing partners. Well, I saw the four color commanders, and I remember tweeting something that was excited, right? I was like, oh, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And then I stepped away, got a sandwich or something. I come back and look at the rest of the spoilers, and I saw these like two colored ones. I was like, okay, that's cool that they printed some more two colored ones. And then I saw it, like, partner, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Oh man, that was rough. And also too, we didn't know how we were going to solve it originally. You know, there were a lot of design decisions to be made, and so it wasn't just work. We actually had to kind of figure out what we were going to do.
Yeah, that was, and I hope this doesn't engender any bad feelings, but the first two partners revealed were Bruce Tarl and our own preview card, Kaideli.
Oh man, I just hope they don't print more of them.
Oh no, are they hard-carded in?
So the way we ended up handling it is that we treat each commander pair as a commander, basically.
Oh, right.
And there's about 105 of them. But the problem is it's multiplicative. So if there's, you know, if they ended up adding 20 of them, now we're talking about having, like, you know, hundreds of combinations, and we'd have to probably think of something better. I'm pretty sure this is a one and done, and they won't do it again. If they do, then we'll have to basically redesign what we did do. So.
Yeah. We just released a PDF of all the partner commanders that Alexander Noom on Twitter put together for us to give to all of our listeners. 105.
Actually, as a player, I'm a little disappointed, to be honest.
Oh.
I mean, there's a couple cool ones, but I've really struggled to like find a combination that I wanted to build.
If they added 20 more partners, then there would be 35 total. So that would make 595 possible two partner combinations.
Yeah, let's not do that. But, you know, it's a cool idea, and I don't know, maybe I'll get around to making one day.
you have at least a year before you need to come up with a more elegant solution.
I'll just see what they come up with next. We'll have, like, three-sided cards or something like that. I don't know.
The next one is you fold the cards in half, and then you put them together, like, in Mad Magazine, the triptych in Mad Magazine.
They have, like, a flip double-sided card or something like that, yeah.
And each side is playable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But only three of them can be your commander.
So EDH Rec now has content, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Besides the obvious.
Yeah, actually, we were supposed to release it a couple months ago, but partners happened. So I'll continue placing the blame on Wizards for that. But so on face value, we decided to have articles on the website and tied in, which was an idea that I wanted to do, but I never really talked myself into it just because it's so different from what we do right now. And I was kind of nervous about how people were going to perceive it in terms of, are we doing something that's outside of our wheelhouse or something like that. But the one major issue that David and I have is that we don't like how EDH Rec doesn't feel alive, kind of sounding in a corny way here. you know, you're looking at the website, it's very static. There's like information on there and you kind of read through it, but there's no sense of community. There's no sense of, hey, there's actually people that are involved here. There's other people that are interested in the same things I'm interested in, things like that. So we have kind of a list of some of the features that we're thinking about adding that kind of tackle that. And we thought that the articles were a good way to start, where it was, you know, relatively a small amount of content rather than having like any user being able to comment on things, and can kind of get us started on that journey there. So, you know, I think it's going to make sense. I think it makes sense now. I hope we're providing value, but I think it's going to tie together better as the year goes on, as 2017 goes on. So that's the plan.
That's cool. Of all the EDH writers out there, who is your favorite EDH writer? And that comes from superfan Eason Jolt.
Well, Jason Alt's definitely not my favorite.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. I guess I can be a little bit biased, but Jason is one of my favorite authors, which is the reason why I, you know, we talked to have him lead up the content. And the reason why is because I wanted content like his content. And I think the things I like about his articles is he doesn't just regurgitate his opinions. He ties in information and data, especially in his MTG price articles. So, you know, that's kind of what the reason why I talked to him about it. So he's always been one of my favorites. And I have to say that my other favorite is Benny Smith. I think he was the first guy that I really started following and started reading EDH articles on.
Yeah.
You know, I really enjoy his decks. You know, I think he really embodies like what EDH is supposed to be. And so I'm a big fan of his.
Do you have secret tags that only you and David and maybe Jason can see that indicate who is the author of each deck cataloged by EDH Rec?
I definitely cheat and use the database directly sometimes for my own purposes. and actually, this is where a lot of my ideas for features come from typically is like, you know, I know that I can do it myself. And so I go behind the scenes and go do it. And then I think about how I could turn that into a feature. That was like how like new cards came up. That's how signature cards came up. For the particular question you're asking about, like what the actual decks are, yeah, we do have that. And actually, that's one of the features that I'm talking about making the whole thing feel more alive, I guess, is right now we only show the recent decks that have been submitted for Commander.
Yeah.
And it's also too kind of finicky about, like, you know, if we don't end up saving the deck, there's a number of reasons why we may not do that, then it won't show up. And so what we want to do is I want to make that list more expansive and allow you to kind of search for particular decks that you want to look at. I think eventually, you know, you'll be able to basically scan through every single deck that we have and have a link back to that deck on Tapped Out. So that's kind of one of our end goals. You know, I kind of hesitate to promise that this will be a feature. You know, we have to prioritize things, but it's something that I would like. I think it's a gap that we have, and it's funny that you asked that. I mean, that's definitely something we've noticed.
That's very cool. Sounds very powerful too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're going to dive into EDH Rec, especially the data from the last several months now. But first, a little news. Now, the astute listener, Nate and Donald, might have heard already a lack of a certain voice on this episode.
I say, pip, pip, cheerio.
Indeed, Sean could not join us. I believe he had to help people find some loose screws, I think is what he told us.
Oh, no, it's in Britain, they're having the winter annual crumpet harvest, where they pour tea on the fields, and then they wait until midnight of the day just before New Year's and harvest all the crumpets.
Oh, and that harvesting takes several hours, doesn't it?
Well, they're totally wasted, so it takes longer than it should.
Mm.
Yeah, I really can't tell if you're joking or not.
Yeah, that's a very British tradition. So we wish Sean good fortune in his crumpet harvesting. Hopefully he had more crumpets than anybody else harvested, because there are prizes. There's like a knighthood, isn't there?
That's right, mate. Crikey.
So as of this recording, all the Kaladesh inventions have been spoiled. Do any of them stand out besides besides our next watch list target, the Paradox Engine?
Yeah.
Good to see the swords reprinted.
Yeah, yeah, they're okay.
How about Wurmcoil Engine?
Oh yeah,
so pretty.
That Phyrexian machine.
That shiny, shiny, untainted engine.
Inherently Phyrexian machine
of destruction. It's not inherently Phyrexian.
It is inherently Phyrexian.
It is not. It's just a machine, Nate.
It's death and life.
Yeah.
Why don't you crack it open?
Yeah. So beautiful. Donald is hypnotized by it right now. It's wavering. It's
I had to look them up again. That's why you hear my keyboard clacking.
Yeah, it's up on its on its rear two thirds right now, and it's sort of swaying beautifully with that big glowing blue eye mouth thing. Wurmcoil.
According to EDH Rec, the most popular commanders for Wurmcoil Engine are Doretti Scraps Avant.
Yeah.
Rhea Ethereum Shaper.
That makes sense.
And Felden of the Third Path.
There you go. Not a Phyrexian to be found among them. Yet.
Oh, and the next one is Glissa the Traitor.
But we were only concerned about the top three.
Sure you were.
I think they did a good job on these. Like there weren't any that super chase like a... like a mana crypt or something stupid like that.
Not this set.
No. I mean, I think I'm okay with that. I don't know. It's okay if they do it every now and then, but...
One of the things Morrow pointed out on his Tumblr blog, he was asked if any particular card of his was first on his list to be reproduced as a masterpiece, and he named a sorcery. So I think next set we're going to see... Amonkhet, we're going to see sorceries as the masterpieces, but...
All right.
So, moving along, I'm actually playing in a Commander 2016 Paper League. We meet at Geeky Tees in Burbank. They make money by selling games, tea, actual tea, and table space, of course. They rent out the table space. And they have a variety of events, so I encourage everybody to go over there. Plus, Donna, the proprietor, is offering a buck off a $5 seat. Yes, 20%! If you mention the Commander in Podcast. Be sure to mention the deal, too. She's a busy lady and might have forgotten. And we've only been there twice. We're going to be there three times by the time this airs, I think. And finally, we have a months-long now Commander 2016 giveaway contest where both Ben Hayes and Ethan Fleischer signed each of the individual decks. And we're going to give each of the individual decks away, one set of those, and then some lucky grand prize winner is going to get all five decks as one complete set. And we're going to draw these people from our Twitter followers, our Facebook likers, our iTunes reviewers in Australia, hopefully, England, and the United States. It turns out there are only three in Sweden, so we probably can't do that because one of them is Bjarne. And the other is Robin Koss. And then there's some other very angry Viking that is the third one. And, of course, our patrons and our YouTube subscribers. So get on over to one of those. Like us. Subscribe to us. Whatever. Follow us. And
push the button.
Push the button and hurry up about it. Because within a week or so of this episode dropping, we're going to announce the winners. So... our main topic, Nate, I'm super excited because this is data and you and I both like data.
Beep, 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 beep.
Hey, before we completely leave the news, the Audric duet on Commander's Brew, the holiday episode, absolutely hysterical. And you should just stop listening to us right now. Go listen to that if you haven't, then come back to us. So. Oh, and in other news, I suppose we're going to be releasing a Star Wars review episode, this time with all three hosts involved. That'll be coming soon. So, main topic. Donald, since last we spoke, and it was published on the 7th of July, 2016, my goodness, how time flies. We've had four sets, not counting Eternal Masters. We've had Eldritch Moon, Conspiracy 2, Kaladesh, and Commander 2016. How do you feel about those?
Yeah, I feel like they're looking, like they're definitely thinking about EDH when they're printing these sets now.
Yeah.
Because I you know, back in my day.
You're supposed to say that back in my day.
Back in my day. used to be lucky if you even got like one EDH viable card in a set. Yeah. And now they're like consistently printing 5 to 7 legendary creatures. You know, some of them are not viable, but you know, every set's been getting like 1 or 2 like actual viable commanders, and then the other ones are kind of niche or strange, which is cool for EDH. So, I mean, as long as they keep this up, you know, we're gonna have plenty of stuff to be playing with, and both in commanders and in cards that go in the 99 as well.
Yeah.
But then they make mistakes like Paradox Engine, and then I start wondering if they've taken it too far.
Well, they designed for limited, basically, and standard. So maybe there's nothing that can go wrong with Paradox Engine and standard for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know about that. It's just, I hope they tested it. Yeah, but I mean, even Conspiracy is like a set basically printed. It might as well have been like Commander 16 Part 1.
Yeah.
You know, actually, in a lot of ways, I like Conspiracy 2 better than this Commander 16 product. Even I did like the 16 product as well, but there's a lot of really interesting cards in Conspiracy. So, and that's also a fun set to play in general. Like, I get the same fun out of that I do get when I play EDH. So, I think they've been good sets, and they've had a lot of good commanders and a lot of good cards. So, yeah, I've been pretty happy with it.
Well, let's take them in chronological order then, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Eldritch Moon.
Yeah.
Which was the most popular card to appear in the 99?
So, the most popular card to appear in the 99, which is pretty common. So, we'll cover the next two, I think, to be fair. The most common was the Gaea Reach Sanitarium, the card that each player draws a card and discards a card, which is fantastic. It's a land. So, it's fantastic for EDH, I think. I think that's a great effect. It doesn't really give anybody, you know, a huge advantage, but, you know, filtering cards definitely makes the game move along. But the reason why it's unfair is because it's a land and it's colorless. So I think whenever you see a colorless land that has some sort of utility, those are always going to be pretty high in the rankings, I find. So the next two cards down are Thalia, the one that, this is in the 99, not as a commander, where creatures and non-basic lands come into play tapped. I was actually kind of surprised that one did so well, but I guess, you know, if you're playing white, it seems a reasonable thing to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then Eldritch Evolution, which I expected to do a little bit better. You know, I think it's still a pretty good card. So I think those three were definitely good. Tamiyo is up there as well, but that's pretty common for Planeswalkers. So yeah, those are the three kind of winners. There are some kind of busts there. I kind of expected Imprisoned in the Moon to do better. It did do pretty good, but you know, I really like that card. I find that card super useful.
Yeah.
And then other than that, you know, I didn't see anything that was too surprising. Mind's Dilation, I think, is a cool card. Probably doesn't see very much competitive play. So.
No, it definitely doesn't. It's that's expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 7 mana.
Yeah.
And I think it's a fact that a lot of decks don't want to play. So. I think it's 6th in the ranking. So given that it's so niche and so expensive. You know, I could argue that it might be one of the more successful cards just because of the nature of it, and still to have some be so popular is kind of impressive.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, this being Commander, we want to know who took the crown in terms of the number one Commander from the set.
Yeah. So, Kisink and Geralf, I remember when the set came out, that took off really quick. And was pacing really, really quickly. Like, I was watching that very closely. I think it kind of fizzled out. I didn't actually run this analysis, but kind of from memory, I remember it picking up really quick and then dying out pretty quick. Like, a lot of people built a lot of decks really quickly, and then it hasn't really kept up momentum. But it's at 440 decks right now, which is not super popular. Anything over 400 commander decks in my database, I think, means that it's viable, at least. Without much work. Then Ulrich, the disappointing werewolf, and Ishkana, the Graf Widow, the spider, are at 183, 182, which is about, you know, more than half as many decks. those are not seeing much play, I think, in the long term. So, you know, I would say, yeah, you shouldn't expect to see those too much. But, you know, Geese and Geralf, I think, are, it's a fun card. It kind of reminds me of Marin a little bit without being Marin. And, yeah. Then Emrakul was interesting. I think, you know, it's only seen 106 decks, but I think you just have better colorless options. And I kind of wish that Bruna and what's her face, Gisela, would have taken off more, but I think it's just too hard to pull off.
How did they fare?
Not as good. So they're both sub 100, which basically means, like, for a set that, a recent set like this with all the EDH players that are building decks as soon as these cards are coming out, you know, it's not very good. So, and I think mono white is kind of rough too. Many of the mono colored commanders that are coming out recently are not faring well, I've found.
Yeah, mono white, and then your commander is vulnerable to exile effects.
Yeah. There's just a lot of problems with it.
Wow. Any other interesting data you wanna point out about Eldritch Moon?
I think that's kind of it. You know, I think they reprinted Murder, which is a pretty popular card. So from a reprints perspective, for those that don't know, if you scroll all the way to bottom, so the way I'm getting this data from the set section of my website, if you scroll all the way down, sometimes you can't see it. It has reprints. Sometimes I look at that to see if there's anything maybe in foil that I want to get easily when the set's first released. But Murder was the only relevant one. But other than that, you know, I don't think there were any too many surprises here. I think Meld didn't have as much of an impact as maybe I would have. It was something I liked, and I didn't see too much of it. Oh, actually, Deploy the Gatewatch was a card that I was watching. That's a card that look at the top seven cards of your library and you pull two planeswalkers out and put them into the battlefield, which is like pretty stupid for, like any sort of Super Friends deck, which has become really popular with Atraxa, you know, that card was, I think, is pretty good. And then Thalia's Lancers as well. You may search a card for, it's a creature that you can search for a legendary card put in your hand. Yeah, that card was pretty good too. So I think that those are the ones that stood out for me.
Yeah, next set was Conspiracy 2.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the 99.
Yeah, so Conspiracy 2 actually was kind of disappointing to me.
Why?
I really like the commanders that they released in Conspiracy 2, the legendary creatures that are available. But the cards that were printed for the 99 were not... there wasn't anything that really stood out. The most popular card is Recruiter of the Guard, which was like a Imperial Recruiter, basically, that could let you find a creature with toughness 2 or less and bring it up. Which tutoring like that is obviously very good. So, you know, that's the only card that really made a huge impact. Sylvala and Sylvala's Stampede saw a little bit. But if you look at the numbers in comparison to, like, Recruiter of the Guard is the most popular card, and that's appeared in 1,100 decks. And then the most popular card is Gyre's Reach Sanitarium, which is 2,000 decks. So even the most popular card is less popular than something like 12 cards in Eldritch Moon. So there wasn't anything I think there was nothing really that groundbreaking in the 99 for Conspiracy 2 is what I found.
I would have thought Regal Behemoth would have taken off a little more.
Yeah, I think it's good in some decks, but it really did not do well. I mean, 380 cards is not very many. Seems like it's good in the decks that it's good in. But like it's not going to see like a huge amount of appeal like Recruiter of the Guard is, where pretty much any white deck should probably be playing that card.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a $14 card too.
Yeah,
that's seeing play in Legacy then. It's got to.
Yeah.
Oh hey, just as an aside, a little bug: Kaya Ghost Assassin is reporting as 20 cents.
Wait, what?
I'll take 40.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. That is definitely weird.
I've noticed that on a couple of cards that sometimes they report as like, you know, 3 cents. And I'm like, I want to shop where they are shopping.
Yeah. I get my prices from MTG Price. And they definitely agree that they're kind of beta-ish. A lot of times I just need to look up and see if it's just it's usually my fault.
So. Is there anyone we know who writes for MTG Price?
Yeah. I don't know.
We love Jason. We actually have to have him on after, sometime soon. We were going to have him on after the Commander 2016 release, but life got insane, so we couldn't really pull it together. Yeah. But man, well, we'll get to that.
We'll get there.
Stay calm, everybody. Mostly Phil. What about commanders? Legendary creatures.
Commanders in this set were interesting, mostly because of Queen Marchesa and Leovold. And the reason why I found this one interesting was because I think Queen Marchesa is a great commander for EDH as, like, I think, you know, the spirit of EDH in terms of, you know, it's an interactive card. It's fun from a casual way. It's not too oppressive. You know, I really like the card. I was thinking about building it, but I just never got around to it. You know, it really exemplifies the Monarch mechanic, and that's cool. And then on the other hand, you had Leovold, who has a lot of competitive potential. Its effect is not very fun. You know, you can basically wheel and take control of the game at any time. And so they're very, like, contrary to each other in terms of the type of player that it appeals to. And, you know, they were both, when the set was released, were kind of fighting hand in hand. And I was kind of curious to see which one was going to win out. But Marchesa won out by a little bit at 500 decks, and Leovold's now at 442. But both are viable commanders and have built archetypes around them, and they're cool. Silvala, Grenzo. So Silvala and Grenzo, I think, suffer because they're monocolored. But Grenzo looks like a ton of fun, and Silvala definitely has some potential. And then, of course, the Boros commander was completely worthless, as usual.
But it has melee.
And other creatures now have melee. I really wonder if they're just, like, messing with us at this point. Actually, the Boros commanders in Commander 16 were decent, but,
yeah.
Like, I remember when the Boros commander was spoiled, it was just like, this again. I can't even believe
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And Dipala sort of redeemed Boros for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nate, did you ever build Grenzo?
Which one?
Havoc Razor.
Nope. I put him in a deck. I took him out, though.
Yeah, I think Grenzo had a lot of potential, but I think it does. I think it's a fun card, but again, it's mono red, very niche. Meanwhile, like Marchesa and Leovold, you can build a few different ways.
Yeah.
And they're multicolored, and I think it appeals to a larger player base.
Yeah, Leovold you can build with Tutor or with Tutors.
With wheels or with more wheels.
Yeah.
With the Teferi's Puzzle Box or no Puzzle Box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, there's no Puzzle Box option there.
I actually haven't played against it. I guess the people I play with that know better.
See, yeah, and that's always the argument for Leovold. Like, oh, Leovold's not so bad because my group would never abuse it. And I'm like, you have never played with strangers.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't have the balls to play a card like Leovold with strangers, to be honest.
Not at full tilt, no. Yeah.
Well, also, too, I don't want to sit down and get hated out. You know, it's like, only people are always, oh, I built Leovold, but believe me, it's not oppressive. It's snake tribal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You know, it was your partner, Jason Ault, who actually said, yeah, okay, we'll take a look at your deck after we kill you.
Exactly.
This Nekuzar is zombie wizard tribal.
Yeah, mostly harmless.
I had somebody play, I ended up feeling bad for him, but he was playing a Gave. A fungus tribal deck. It was really bad, but the guy got hated out every time anyways.
But you can't take the chance.
It's just better just to have the commander match what your deck does.
Right, and if you come out with Gave, you know that you just better know you're going to get hit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I hear people are making Atraxa fungus tribal decks now.
Yeah. that's exactly what I'm talking about, you know.
They're trying to find the minimum viable winning deck with Atraxa. And even Fungus Tribal is still going to win with Atraxa.
Yep.
Oh, spoilers, though. That's two segments ahead from now. All right. Move on to Kaladesh, the Bright Inventors set.
Kaladesh was a good one, I think, for EDH. Like, I think there were a lot of cards that were printed that we needed to be paying attention to. The most obvious one was Panharmonicon. Lets you double any triggered ability. You know, that's pretty good. It's colorless. It's viable. I think ETB effects are obviously very important in EDH. So, yeah, I had no surprise that card did very well. Inventor's Fair, again, I think is overrepresented because it's a colorless land, so it's going to see a lot of play. So I wasn't too impressed with the card, but, it ended up doing well. And then Aetherflux Reservoir was interesting. That card did really well. I added Aetherflux Reservoir to this mono-black, like, life gain Life Drain deck that I have, and it's really good. So it adds redundancy to the Sanguine Bond Exquisite Blood combo, and then every now and then, like, I would just have like 55 life, and I'd just kill somebody just for the fun of it. So, and also it gives you the passive life gain when you cast spells. I really like that card. So, you know, that did well. And then it drops off pretty quick after there. Like, there was nothing else, I think, that really stood out too well. I think Authority of the Consoles, which is the one-man enchantment that makes creatures enter to play tapped. You know, I think that's a good effect. But
yeah, it's great.
Better for, like, control decks and stuff. The Planeswalkers didn't do so good. Like, Nissa, Vital Force, and Dovin Band did okay. And Chandra did okay. They had the Czech lands. Or do they call those the Tango lands, right?
I don't know what they call it.
Yeah, it's the Tangolands or whatever people decided to call it.
Takes two.
Yeah. So that those were printed, and, you know, I think those cards are decent and should see some play. But so yeah, for the 99, those are the big standouts.
I think when they released Panharmonicon, everybody was like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, what's this?" And their response was just wait.
this is nothing.
Yeah, you've seen nothing yet.
Panharmonicon was such a smashing hit that we decided to do Paradox Engine.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let's move to the commanders. What do we have going on there?
Yeah, so nothing huge here. The biggest one was Rashmi, which is basically just like every other Simic commander that's ever been printed. I don't know. I have a hard time getting behind Simic. I know some people are really passionate about it, but I feel like there's not very much diversity in the strategies in Simic, and I think Rashmi didn't really add anything new. So I think it didn't, you know, this is my human opinion, is that that's probably one of the reasons why it didn't perform very well, is I don't think people were like, oh, you know what, Rashmi's a card that really made me want to try Simic, right? I think there's other commanders that have done things that it kind of did, too.
Did you say that's your human opinion?
Yeah. So I try to separate my human opinion and my data opinion.
Oh, got it.
I have to say that on Reddit a lot when I'm actually posting. It's like, my human opinion is that, you know, as a player, I have to separate these things. I have no data that actually shows that I'm correct, is basically what I'm trying to say. Gonti, Lord of Luxury, did okay, especially for a monocolored commander. So yeah, I mean, I think he did that as good as you could expect a monocolored commander to do. So if he was multiple colors, he probably would have done better, but, you know, seems reasonable. A Campbell, the black-white guy, yeah, basically does whatever other black-white guy does.
Nate, I know you built a Gonti deck. Did Sean build one as well?
No, Sean built the Gonti deck.
Oh, he did. I thought you were doing Lord Humongous. Oh, with...
that's King Makar.
Yes, right, with Makar. So he built the Gonti. He also built Kumbel, didn't he?
Yeah, we both did.
And then Johnny Crass built Gonti as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think my personal opinion is that Gonti was the most interesting one here. You know, it added kind of like an interesting interactive archetype to mono black, I think, where mono black doesn't have too many diverse options. So I was happy to see that, because I think a lot of the other commanders here were kind of predictable. I think the Boros commander again had a lot to be left desired. DePaul,
but she's a tutor.
Yeah, sure, you can. Yeah, that's fantastic.
You can tutor up any dwarf or vehicle in the top X cards.
That's fantastic. well, you know what? I'm kind of let down because if you recall, the Apollo was spoiled pretty early, and so I was like, "Oh man, they're gonna print a bunch of like good dwarves and vehicles. This could be cool." And then it was like, "Yeah, I mean, there's not enough to make it worth it." So, I mean, I'm sure you can get the deck to work, but I just never felt the need to build it. I'm starting to realize I'm sounding really salty today. Like, PNLR shows that they're still willing to print legendary creatures that are not commander viable.
Yeah, for a while, we kind of thought she was our Thopter Queen, but then realized how disappointing she was.
So I think mono red might be one of my favorite color combinations in EDH, mostly just because it's kind of a challenge to get it to work, and I think there's a lot of interesting commanders in mono red. So I actually sat down and tried to think about how I would get that to work, and I just couldn't get there.
So, nope.
I think if the ability that gave the fire breathing was like just one red, I think I could have worked it out, because then you could have, like, you know, that one Thopter that came out like really smacked people pretty hard, but two was just too much.
That newly pimped out Ornithopter.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I mean, like, Ornithopter, like, has so much nostalgia to so many of us. I had Ornithopter decks when I was a kid, just because I had fun trying to figure out how to get that to work. So I'm definitely going to be picking up one of those.
You mean I can cast it for free?
I can cast two on the first turn.
What?
I remember keeping, like, no land Ornithopter hands. I was young then.
Yeah.
I was young then.
Yeah, you put a unholy strength on one of those puppers, and bam, you hit someone for 2 damage.
Yep.
I expected Padim to do a little bit better, but I guess he goes into Muzio.
Yeah, so I think that's a common theme that I'm seeing here, is that the commanders that are not adding much do not get built very much. Again, I want to do some data analysis to confirm this, but the really popular commanders like Marchesa and Leovold, they start out really strong and then they teeter out. There's obviously a big rush of people that want to build them as soon as they come out, and then they teeter out, and they, you know, you get a constant amount over time, which is a lot less than when they came out. I think commanders like Padim, because there's another commander that does something that's very similar to Padim, nobody's rushing to go build that burst like early on, right? But, you know, we see a couple decks here and there, so I think they're at a disadvantage. But when somebody's sitting there like, oh, I'm going to build a mono blue artifact deck now, they have a better choice, and they may pick Padim over Muzio. So, you know, I think there's a number of reasons where when something's not that, it's not offering something new, you know, it's not going to be very popular. And it was mono, and it was mono colored. So
I wonder if you can slice the data so that we can vertically stack it, like by artifact theme or.
Yeah.
By +1/+1 counters theme.
Or... Yeah. So this is something that we thought about doing, and we'd have to look into it, but it's something it's on my to-do list. I'll say that. And the way I think we would have it shake out is right now we have tribes available where you can see like zombies, goblins, elves, dragons, or whatever. I think we could do something similar where we were keying on something particular like +1, the mention of tokens or the mention of +1/+1 counters or the number of types in the like artifact based decks, enchantment based decks. It's almost like the same thing as tribal. It's just keying on something different. So I think it's something that's in the realm of possibilities, and we just need to work on it.
That's cool. That'll open it up to some interesting contests too. And I mean that in the physical sense, or even in our deck testing group, where we can say, okay, everybody picks an artifact themed deck. We run with that, and we see we can weight it and give points out based on that, and we can run a little league and then see what, based on popularity, the adjusted winners are.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I think the reason why I've been hesitant about it is it's a little bit more open-ended than tribes. Like, we would have to hard code every rule.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll get there one day. But we had to work on partners for 3 months, so.
Partners.
I'll continue blaming partners on our lack of progress in this past quarter here.
Before we move on to the next one, which of course is Commander 2016, we knew that the previous set, Commander 2015, had a legendary creature in it, Marin of Clan Nel'Toth, who was going to unseat Aloro for most prolific deck designs. How did that turn out? When did she eclipse Aloro?
So I'm not... The last I checked, she has not.
That's right. 1370 decks versus Aloro's mighty 1416, 1,416 decks.
Yeah. She Moran was on pace to pass, but then Atraxa happened, and that changed everything. So, you know, I think, I had predicted, I believe, that Moran was going to pass Aloro, I think, in November, if the trends had stayed the same. And
I believe you said October 18th at 3:32 p.m.
That sounds about right. and then I think Atraxa attracts. Oh man, that's funny. Atraxa attracts I think the same kind of players that Moren. Like Atraxa is very similar in a lot of ways. Like has a good passive effect. It's not demanding that you build your deck in a certain way. It's in good colors. You know, so I think there's a lot of parallels, and I think a lot of people, when they were sitting down to build a deck where they were deciding what they were going to build, I think instead of choosing Moren, then maybe they went chose Atraxa instead, which slowed down Moren's growth and then just blew past Aloro. It is continuing to grow. And Brea also which is the second popular commander, is probably going to pass Loro at some point, I believe.
Wow.
So probably in the next couple of months, unless it slows down.
Take that, lazy giant.
Yeah.
Now, do you have the ability to analyze the data and see, like, when Atraxa showed up, did Meren's curve stall?
Meren, I can't say that it really slowed down too much. It's hard to tell because not only did Atraxa become popular, but EDH in general became popular with the Commander 16. And we saw this with 15 as well, where overall traffic had increased significantly during spoiler season after the set. So we saw an increase in Meren decks since Atraxa was spoiled, but you know, I'd have to like, so it's hard to say, but it didn't, maybe should have grown more perhaps, I'm not sure. But yeah, it wasn't significantly impacted, but yeah, I mean, maybe it would have been less so or something. I don't know. It's hard to tell without, you know, knowing, pretending like Atraxa didn't exist.
Well, it looks like on 10/18, Meren was still the number one most referenced commander. And then on 10/19 became number two. Poor Meren.
Yep. So, well, that's an interesting stat. The graph you're talking about is the commander popularity on the commander page, right?
Yes, sir.
So that one is different because the stat on the front page is about how many decks have been submitted or how many decks we've collected. This one's about who's looked at this commander on EDHREC, like viewed the page, which is a different thing, yeah. Right? And yeah, I mean, Meren was like number one, number two, and then as soon as it was spoiled, Commander 16 was spoiled, it stayed at six for the most part. So all five of the Commander 16 commanders are more popular than Meren. Now,
in terms of rate of growth,
in terms of views on the website
referencing,
yeah, I mean, she had a run, but Atraxa just, yeah, it's been a phenomena that is just, I spent a lot of time looking at this thing. I really still can't believe it. Well, I mean, all of them really, I mean, all of them are like Atraxa and Brea in particular performed really well. The other three have relatively good stats.
So the set did well.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the amount of decks that were made, it's insane. Yeah. I mean, I guess you want to start talking about this officially then?
Yeah, let's just start talking about the legendaries, and then we'll hit the 99s afterward.
You know, separating them out, we've got the partners, which kind of have to be treated separately, and then we've got the five commanders. So in order, Atraxa, the Null Red was the most popular, and then Brea, the artifact one, with Null Green was the next one, with about two-thirds as many decks as Atraxa. And then Yidris, the Cascade guy with Null White. And then Akainas and Tira Miletus, you know, dropping off with a third as many decks as Atraxa. And then Saskia, which is the most Boros-like commander of these five, as the last, of course. So, yeah, I think I kind of expected some, I think maybe I expected Brea to be a little bit better or more popular. But I think what Atraxa has going for it is that it has a lot of different play styles that, I mean, Fungus Tribal to Super Friends to, you know, +1/+1 counters, charge counters, energy counters, Infect. Like, there's so many different things you can do with it that I think that's why it's so popular. Meanwhile, Brea is like, yeah. I'm an artifact commander, right?
Do you like artifacts?
Yeah, like, there's pretty much no other way to build Brea other than artifacts, I think.
You could do Atraxa artifacts with goofy things like Brain in a Jar or yeah. Mm-hmm. Grimoire of the Dead.
Yeah, like, I think Atraxa might even be a better artifact commander than Brea is. Yeah, I mean, Atraxa is going to continue doing well, I think. The number of decks is just staggering, and I think, like Meren, it's going to continue doing well as time goes on. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out.
You mentioned once before that you purged decks that were a little too similar. Have you done that with Atraxa and the others yet?
One of the things that has really been a problem with this one, this set in particular, I think because the Commander 16, from my perspective, looking at the numbers, was more popular than 15. I think, and also too, I see this in the store where, you know, people are getting into EDH more for the first time, and they're taking this as an opportunity to get into it. So that's great, right?
Yeah.
I think, so what we've internally been calling this is the pre-con effect, which is true with the other ones, which is basically you have a bunch of people submit a bunch of decks that are modified pre-cons, and everybody modifies them in a little bit different of a way. And so what happens is when you average it out, it becomes the pre-con list, right? So if you look at the Atraxa page, the Brea page in particular, they're very skewed towards the cards that are in the pre-con. And so what we did was we went and purged all the decks that were something like six cards away from the precon, six or seven cards away from the precon. So if you only swapped out six cards, then that deck got deleted. And then, you know, in hopes of bringing up cards up to the top, but it actually didn't have too much of an effect. So, you know, we have a couple of ideas that we want to kind of help solve this problem. Right now, advanced filters, I think, does a good job. But, you know, I know that not every user knows how to use them. But the basic idea with advanced filters and getting more value out of these guys, I really recommend if you're looking at these commanders, is like Atraxa, who has so many different options, like pick a couple key cards that are really important to your theme. Like if you go into Atraxa and you pick out, let's say, three infect creatures that you think you should be using, you're going to get it, like the infect Atraxa, like the results are going to be good. So, you know, I really recommend using advanced filters with the commanders, the precon commanders, at least for now, until we figure out how we're going to solve this problem. It is something we want to solve. It's just, we haven't quite figured out how yet. And our current approaches of purging the similar decks really hasn't had as much of an effect as we want.
Do you include a feature that allows you to see the precon as it's been published by Wizards?
No. So this was actually one of the features that I had on my plate when partners hit. What I wanted to do, so you'll have to wait until Commander 17 for this feature maybe, was have like the precon, and we may do this to combat the precon effect, but the precons might have a special page where the page is specifically geared towards what to cut from the precon list and then what to add. Because one thing that's interesting about the precon list is like, what cards should I cut, which are the cards that most other people have cut. And that's not really conveyed in any sort of way on the website right now. So that was something that we wanted to do. But I think we kind of missed the boat at this point. I know that Commander 16 is still popular, but pretty soon we're going to have Aether Revolt. Then people are going to be focusing on that. So I think it's something that I won't forget for the 17.
It's the quiet time, though. Now's the time.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Wow, you are burnt. That was pretty trying.
Yeah, partners was rough. Yeah. Oh, so I guess we should talk about partners then.
Now our patron, Jackie Miller, who is the first lady of Commander, and as she calls herself, insists that we call her that. But she is pretty sure it's Ikaris Shiddiqui as the most popular Commander partner. Is that true?
Nope. Well, according to me... Well, okay, so that's funny. You got to define...
Wait. Your human opinion?
My data opinion, which also, too, you know, one thing that I want to point out is that EDHREC is based on decks that are posted on Tapped Out. And if most people are like me, maybe only one out of 10 of those decks actually gets built.
Oh, so it's Tapped Out in deck stats, right?
Yeah. So the way it works right now is that I can do commander recommendations on deck stats decks, but the decks I'm collecting now are only from Tapped Out.
Dun, dun, dun.
Actually, we could talk about that a little bit, about it actually has some impacts on Atraxa and things like that. But
well, maybe we'll get into that. We have a few questions later. I'll add that to the questions segment. We also have a question about MTG Vault, so we'll just double it into there.
All right. So on partners, the most popular partner that I have listed is Vile Smasher,
mm-hmm.
which is has double as many decks as Akiri.
Wow.
However, interestingly enough, if you look at it a different way, Akiri and Silas Wren is the number three most popular combo, if that makes sense. So basically, Akiri by itself is nowhere near the most popular. However, Silas Wren Akiri is the third most popular.
Huh.
So that's kind of interesting. So Vile Smash is the most popular Kaideli.
Kaideli, yeah.
And then Thrasios are...
Nate wrote a song about her, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you haven't heard it, we'll send it to you.
All right. Does it involve Prophet of Crucifix or no?
A little bit. There's a line in there.
So Thrasios was also important, popular. Not surprising that the two Simic ones were pretty popular. And then Ravos, the black-white one, was the next. So if you look at the popularity of the individual ones, that's how it goes. With Vile Smasher and then the two Simic ones as being like standouts in terms of popularity. But if you look at the pairs as separates, one thing, the ones that stand out are Kaideli and Vile Smasher is the most popular by far.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think they play off each other well, and they were in the pre-con together.
She helps you cast a big spell.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it makes sense. Like, I can see that. It's like, okay, yeah, they have some synergy. Next one down is Thrasios and Vile Smasher. So you basically just swap out the Simic Commander for the other one.
That little goblin.
But interesting, so Thrasios and Vile Smasher, and then Thrasios and Kaideli, so the two Simics together, and then Silas Wren and Akiri, like, they're kind of neck and neck. So as I've been watching it, they've been kind of swapping positions. So basically, Vile Smasher and Kaideli are like a standout in terms of popularity. And then it kind of, there's like a next tier down, which is the two Simics together, and then the artifact-based Akiri, Silas Wren combo, and then Vile Smasher and Thrasios. One deck that I personally wanted to make was the two Boros commanders together. Yeah, that's because I hate myself. I haven't gotten it.
Well, we have we do have some Boros fans in the both our deck testing group and, of course, our listening audience.
The reason why I'm so salty about it is because, again, like I said earlier, Mono Red is one of my favorites, and then Boros is one of my favorites as well. So, like, I'm salty about it because I want there to be something good that's, like, somewhat viable. But, you know, I've tried a bunch of things, but it's never lasted.
Well, next year, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see. We have plenty of opportunities.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is a big set. This one really had a big impact.
The one thing I want to point out that I found surprising, or maybe not so surprising, was that I don't think Partners was as popular as maybe Wizards thought it was going to be, or maybe they knew that this was going to be the case. But if you look at the top partner pairs, like Kaideli and Vile Smasher, and even put that together with Vile Smasher and Thrasios, let's say, or even just looking at Vile Smasher by itself, Vile Smasher itself was member of 228 decks, where if you heard me earlier, my benchmarks are like 500 is a viable, like, popular deck. 400 means, like, you know, it's pretty decent. 300 means you might have to build around it. 200 is like it's niche. 100 is like jank, right?
Poor Sidar.
Yep. How about Ludevic, right? That guy, man, he did terrible.
Aww.
Yeah. We all wanted him to be good. I wish they had just put somebody else's name on it. So, but in comparison to Atraxa, or the five, you know, four-color commanders, Partners were not nearly as popular as just the four-color commanders themselves. So I found that a little interesting. I thought there were going to be more partner decks.
Well, do you think that's the wave of people building with four-color decks because they're four-color commanders because it's exciting right now?
I think so.
Do you think eventually the partners will pick up a little?
Yeah, I think so. I think it also has to do with the four-color commanders are really interesting. Like, I think they all each do something somewhat new. Like, we've kind of mentioned this earlier where a commander that repeats something over again, it's not going to be as popular. Like, all five of the commanders do something that's, like, pretty interesting. And isn't really replaced, and it's in a color combination that obviously doesn't have very much in it. So, you know, I think they did a good job designing commanders that people want to play. And the partners, on the other hand, I think they needed a little bit more flexibility. Like, the ones that stood out to me as being interesting were Vile Smasher, Kaideli, and Silas Wren were kind of my favorites. You know, like, a lot of them kind of had a lot to be left to be, yeah, like Cedar Kondo, for example, Ludevic. Yeah, there were a few in there that I was like, man, they could have made that a little bit more interesting. So, I don't know. That's my human opinion.
But Ludevic is so mighty.
I don't know. It's pretty...
At the beginning of each player's end step, that player may draw a card if a player other than you lost life this turn.
Yeah, it's group hug.
It is. It's group hug.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of a defense, too.
Yep.
Yeah, it's something to be, you know, there's a little bit more to be desired, I think.
Well, I'm sure those 60 decks he's in are
very nice.
Do we want to talk about the 99? Yeah. The non-commander 99?
Yeah. So again, at the top, we have Ash Barrens, which is a colorless land that has a lot of value in a lot of decks. You know, that card did very well. You know, I think it cheated a little bit by being a colorless land, but, you know, it's still a good card.
Cheater.
The big standout one is Deep Blue Oak's Gate.
Mm-hmm.
That card is super broken. You know, it's not super broken. It's not Paradox Engine broken, but it is. Yeah, you know, I think Deep Blue Oak's Gate is, like, pretty fun, but it can be, like, abused pretty bad. But, you know, it's cool, you know, especially with all the million Super Friends deck, Atraxa Super Friends decks that were made in the past 2 months, you know, it's going to see a lot of play. Other than that, actually, for Commander set, there's really not that much that stands out. Sylvan Reclamation came up, Exile 2 Artifacts for Enchantments, you know, that seems like a good card. Crystalline Crawler, you know, okay, so it's going to be popular in multicolor decks. And then it kind of drops off from there. Like, nothing really was printed that I would say is a huge staple. That I, from a numbers perspective.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of surprised. Like, I almost feel like they spent a lot of time thinking about the commanders, and maybe they could have spent more time thinking about the 99, you know, the new cards that were printed for the 99. But, I mean, I don't know. That's my criticism. But, yeah, there's a few decent cards in here. But I remember on my decks, I did not pick up many of these cards for my existing decks.
Oh, really? So you didn't pillage these for your existing ones?
Yeah, like, I added Magus of the Will to my black deck, Ash Barons to a couple things, but there was nothing really that I really wanted to use. So.
And Prismatic Geoscope is really only beneficial in 4- and 5-color decks.
Yeah, so I have a 5-color deck right now, but I was planning on taking it apart, so I think that's one of my other problems, is a lot of my decks, the few decks that I'm playing right now are, like, very few colors, so.
Oh, yeah. So Andy again asks, what is the likelihood each commander set will produce a new top spot winner?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at most recent, every set's had, like, one in the past year.
Right.
So by top spot, I guess you could define that in a few different ways, but I'm going to say that's over 500 decks. Like, there's one commander that stands out. I think that's going to be a trend that's going to continue. I think people want to see it, and I think Wizards is going to do it. So, I think it's going to be every set, likely. If it's not, then I think it'll be harder to calculate when there's a set that doesn't have a good commander that's printed in it.
And we had a question also about what your data suggests makes a legendary creature so appealing, and you already addressed that. You think it's the flexibility and kind of the passive ability, like Oloro, yeah. Marin, and Atraxa all share that sort of passive ability.
Yeah, I think these are things I've noticed, and these are based on my human opinion again. And so these are things that I noticed from looking at the cards. Like, when I'm trying to figure out what's different between Atraxa and Yidris, you know, like, why was one popular? And I can come up with some opinions. This actually brings up a point that I want to kind of tease a little bit. I don't know if we're ever going to get to this, but right now, EDH Rec doesn't look at the content of the cards at all. You know, it really doesn't care what is on the card itself. It doesn't care that it's flying. It doesn't care that it's lifelink. It doesn't care what the colors are. All it knows is the name of the card and how many times it was used and when it was used with something else. And I think one of the things we might want to start doing is looking at the content of the card and making that integral into the recommendations and pulling out more information from there. And I think if we tapped into that kind of realm that we haven't really looked at it at all, you know, I could come up with a better answer to this question. Like, hey, when a commander is this many colors and it's this mana cost and it has these keywords in it, you know, those are really correlated to, successful commander, for example. So that's the kind of thing that we want to try to do, but we just haven't, we've been working on partners, so.
That's a very active sort of recommendation as opposed to essentially a passive version right now.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that gets around too is that, we kind of have to wait for decks to roll in when a new card is released. I think by looking at the content of the card, we may actually be able to provide recommendations before a card's even been used in decks. As soon as the card is spoiled, we might be able to determine cards like this are played in Olivia Voldaren, for example. We think that based on the content of the card, this card's going to be played in these decks. I think that would be really compelling, and because right now you have to wait like maybe a month before you really see enough data for a particular set to see what it's going to get played in.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Well, I have to actually do the work first, so don't get too excited.
It's too late. I'm excited.
All right.
Nate, are you excited?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll tell David to start cracking.
David, get cracking. We've started talking already about kind of the future of EDH Rec. Is there a way to tell how frequently a card is used in a given color combination? Like the example that this was inspired by Jeremiah from our deck testing group, which this might be his first mention on the podcast. For example, Basilisk Collar in a 5-color deck or in any 5-color deck.
I mean, there's definitely no way of doing that now.
David.
So I definitely hesitate to sign up for. So usually when I get a feature request like this, I'll kind of tell you what my thought process is. I think what a question like this is really asking is wanting more information about a certain card and how it's played in context in different things. So right now, like if you look up a card, the two things I have currently are the top commanders that card is played in. Which obviously you can kind of get a sense of kind like maybe answering his question. And then the average deck pie chart. So for example, I'll look at Deep Low Skate, for example. On average, when Deep Low Skate is in the deck, there's 9 Planeswalkers. So I can kind of get a sense that there's a Planeswalker theme there. But one thing in general I think that we could beef up better is the stats for a particular card. Like, we take a very commander-centric view on the site, and that's what we spend most of the time on. But I think, I think there's definitely some more stats here that could be added. And we've wanted to, but it's been like hard to prioritize that over some of the commander-based features, mostly because of the traffic. Like the commander pages on our traffic are significantly higher than the card traffic.
Sure.
I don't know. I guess I could write it down, but honestly, I think we're going to find bigger fish to fry before we ever get to that.
Since we're on the topic of Deep Close Gate. Yeah, that makes sense. It's an interesting analysis tool, but in the end, it may not provide any real benefit to all but a few people.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it would provide benefit, but it has a lot to do with how much time we have and prioritizing things. And, I actually would love for the website to continue to grow, for us to make more money on ads so that I can put more into it, right?
Yeah. So everybody going to the site tonight or today or whenever you're listening to it, make sure you click on the banner ads up at the top.
I'm pretty sure that's illegal if I say it, so.
I mean, Donald would never say that, everybody. But we, your loyal friends, certainly can.
Yeah, and also, too, if you click on them from different devices, that helps.
Donald would never recommend you click on those banner ads from multiple devices you might own. But, Nate, I'm clicking on the banner ads on no less than 3 devices right now.
I can't hear the clicking.
Oh, you'll hear the clicking. Click, click. Oh, it's the tapping, too. Hold on.
Oh, man, my ad revenue is going to jump like $4. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll spike.
I'm gonna be rolling in the dough.
Is it CPK or CPA?
I'm not sure. so I use Google AdSense, and it's very mysterious.
They know all our tricks. Yeah. They're listening right now.
You're gonna post it on YouTube, and they're gonna know.
Yeah, and Google Feedburner is gonna know before anybody else too.
Yeah, we're screwed.
Yeah. So, as your greatest supporters among podcasters, including even your partner, Jason Auld. We are actually bigger supporters of you than Jason. I know that's hard to believe because Jason has done so much work for you. But we're going to try to make time to meet more regularly. Like, we really, we just got to say every Wednesday after a set release or whatever, we just do it. We'll work it out behind the scenes.
Yeah,
you're still up for that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if we just get it on the calendar, we'll make time for it. And then I have like a kind of annoying constraint. Anything before 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is pretty hard for me because I have 3 kids under the age of 5. So,
what you've got to do is start getting them used to the idea that you're ignoring them. That way, by the time they turn into teenagers, like they're already like, "Oh yeah, Dad, we had one of those, right?"
Yeah, he plays a card game a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, he plays a card game, and he's always, shut up, I'm recording tonight.
I think the regularity will help out. Because then I can plan for it and get my wife used to it. So
yeah, all right, we'll set something up, and then even if it isn't all 3 of us like tonight, then we'll still manage to do it just to get that regular that rhythm going.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, so Sean, who sadly is what's he doing?
Crumpet harvest.
Where do you think he is in the crumpet harvest? It's now 5 a.m. local time in Crumpet Harvestland.
Oh, right now he's probably in 3rd place and rising.
Yeah. Sean is a competitive sort. He will not stand for third place or lower.
Have to get the ribbon, eh?
What ribbon is that, Sean?
The Crumpet Harvest Celebration ribbon.
That's fantastic. What color is it?
Oh, it's Earl Grey colored.
And what's it made out of?
Hemp.
I didn't realize, Sean, that you were such an organic fellow.
Quite so.
So Sean invented this this sequence he calls 5 minutes of madness. I sort of stole it in order to get some questions from our deck testing group. It also has Petroni in there. But for these purposes, we probably won't distinguish between them. Are you ready for a hot round of questions?
Sure. This is ready as I already.
Now, Nate, you were there. Is this supposed to take 5 minutes, or were we supposed to give them 5 minutes to ask the questions?
You gave them 5 minutes, but you gave them 10 minutes, so
cheated. It was 10 minutes of madness.
You have more than 5 minutes worth of questions here, sir.
Indeed.
Am I supposed to answer them robot. Quickly, or can I take 5 minutes to answer the first question?
Let's find out.
All righty. First question comes from Dean Guti, a.k.a. Grubfellow. And you've already answered it. So it was, what prompted the shift to a more social platform? And the answer was you didn't like how static the site was. That's okay, because Dean asks another question. As he does make the site more and more integrated, will he end up adding a deck building feature like Tapped Out or Deck Stats?
Yes, I think it's kind of rough because I don't want to... I think Tapped Out and Deck Stats do a good job, and I don't... As a user myself, I don't want to have to keep my decks in two different places.
Mm.
I think what my dream would be is that you could build a deck on EDHREC that had a little bit more handholding to it, that kind of incorporated recommendations as you were typing in cards, which is the basic feature. But then at the end of the day, I would never store the deck. You just export it to, you know, Tapped Out or Deck Stats or wherever.
Yeah.
So I think that's where I think that'll fit in. But it's something that I think it's on the list. Of things that may eventually get done.
Are you saying you might set up an automatic recursive data loop?
Yes.
What?
Beware. We know how those computer AIs function.
Yeah. You know what? I'll call the feature that. I'll call it the recursive automatic data loop.
Yeah. And that way when some innocuous deck starts spiraling out of control and unseats Atraxa, well, we know what happened.
Yeah. Because the algorithm was telling everybody to play some Boros Commander.
Yeah. Henry Stuckenborg. Would he consider a paid membership level that allows access to more advanced mining tools like diamond pickaxes?
What?
I added the like diamond pickaxes thing.
I thought so.
Yes, we have considered it. I think in general, we have talked about more advanced monetization, I guess, than just ads. And the main reason for that is, you know, to make more money. And to be honest, you know, I make enough money on my day job that I know this sounds corny, but I do invest all the money that I make back into the site in terms of paying for, you know, David's time and the author's time and things like that, and the server costs and things like that. So when I do make more money, I do want to make more features. So, you know, I think I'd like feedback from people about, you know, what they would be willing to pay for that isn't kind of forced, you know, because I want to make as many features available to as many people as possible without kind of paywalling it off. So like what's striking that balance has kind of made us hesitate on jumping in on like a premium support model. We also consider things like Patreon and just like PayPal donate, or maybe a Kickstarter for implementing a particular kind of feature. So yeah, I mean, I'd like to hear feedback about what people were willing to do without feeling alienated or pissed off or whatever, because that's the last thing I want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. We understand that fully, actually.
Yeah.
Later on in the show, we'll have ways to contact you, and we'll be sure to bring this up.
Yeah, again. Yeah, absolutely. I would love to hear that because it's something I want to do, and I think it would improve EDHREC. But at the same time, like, having so premium features that are paid for, I think it's hard to get. Like, I can use the money that premium level is paying for to build those premium features, but you know, I want to figure out a way how to tie that in to make the whole website better, not just the one for the premium members, I guess.
Right.
So that's my major hold up with that particular model. But it's not ridiculous at the same time. So
Cody, aka not Cody Smith, it's his first day in the deck testing group, and look at this, he gets questions right away. He says, "I think Spy Kid is a more powerful card than people give it credit for. What is Donald's opinion on it not being in too many decks?"
Spy Kid. I had to look it up, to be honest. Hold on, let me read the card.
So, Spy Kit, a 2-mana artifact equipment, equipped creature gets +1/+1, and has all names of non-legendary creature cards in addition to its name. Equipped to.
What am I supposed to do with this card?
Why isn't it as popular? Why?
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, it seems like it seems like just not very good. I hope I don't make a...
Cody, what he means is he'll give us the answer off air.
You know, okay. So, in all seriousness, I think there's a lot to be desired with this card, but I think cards like this are too niche. Like, if you're gonna have one card in the deck that does this, you need some sort of redundancy, and you need some sort of like major combo that it interacts with, or something like that. I think that's what's lacking from this guy. It doesn't do anything by itself. You have to have other things in it. You have to build your deck around it, and to build a deck around one artifact that you're going to have in your deck is kind of a tough proposition, I think.
But imagine the shenanigans with Evil Twin.
Hey, man, I like the card's cool, but yeah, we'll see.
Next question. From friend of the show, Nicholas Jaragrulski. Donald, can you confirm once and for all, statistically, so not with your human opinions, that Gruul is the best?
I cannot confirm that.
Ah, take that, Nick.
I'll be kind of pedantic here and say that EDH Rec only tells you what's popular, not what's best.
Mm-hmm. So it's possible, actually, you're saying.
It is possible that it is best, but statistically, I can only tell him what's most popular. It is not the most popular.
And with the most popular commander, newly crowned most popular commander, not having any red in her.
Definitely.
The argument thins.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of cool things in Gruul, but popularity is not one of them.
So the aforementioned Dean Grubfellow, is your name secretly a supervillain pun name? D minor equals data minor?
I hear this all the time. So on my day job, I would do what you call data mining. I get that all the time.
Yeah. So no comment.
Yep.
Jaragrulski asks, Donald, explain to Phil why Phyrexian cards are worth playing. I don't think that's a real question. you don't play any Phyrexian cards, right?
I mean, I can't.
Do you have a filter that will identify Phyrexian cards?
Like Phyrexian mana or Phyrexian cards?
Well, yes.
Or like they have the Phyrexian watermark, or they just have the Phyrexian mana symbol?
Phyrexian watermark, Phyrexian mana, Phyrexian in its name, as long as it's not Arena with Koth on it.
I do not.
Nate knows all the rules. He can help you. He's a former programmer. He's still a programmer. Because you never, it's like riding a bike.
So one thing that I'll offer up as well is I know that I could come up with this. It's obviously not a feature of the website, but the card data that I have, I can differentiate between Phyrexian mana symbols, and I can pull the watermarks. So if there was a specific question that you wanted to ask about, like, you know, what the most popular Phyrexian cards are, something like commanders or whatever, just tweet it at me, and then I'm always happy to answer questions like that in the form of a Excel spreadsheet or table or something like that. So I've done that several times, so feel free.
Mainly, Donald, I need to be able to prove once and for all that certain cards are not Phyrexian, such as Kaladesh Invention Worm Coil, or even the GP promo Worm Coil. Was there one? No, the Batterskull, I mean. And the Commander 2014 Worm Coil. Those are not Phyrexian cards. I mean, come on.
If it would really help you sleep at night, I'll spend some time figuring it out for you.
Mr. Stukenborg, do you believe your trend charts influence the actual popularity of the commanders listed? A real question.
Oh, man. This is a great question. Because we found the answer yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
So we were looking at Marin and Atraxa. And so my answer is yes. I do believe that I do. I'm not sure exactly how, but there's some signal here that leads me to believe this. So one thing that happened back in April of this year, we started, so before April, we were only saving decks that people were submitting for recommendations. So when you submitted your deck in the top right, we stored the deck and that's what fed the stats. In April, what we did was we switched it so that we were proactively going to Tapped Out and grabbing decks that were not being submitted. So we were now grabbing, you know, basically all commander decks on Tapped Out effectively. And we did this for a number of reasons that, you know, it'd take a while to explain. But one thing that we found was that the percentage of Marin decks, we were looking at Marin in particular, the percentage of Marin decks that we were receiving before the switch was higher than after the switch. So basically, when I pull all of Tapped Out, the percentage of Marin decks is lower than the percentage of Marin decks we were seeing when we were only pulling decks that people were submitting. So what that means is people are submitting decks, Marin decks, more often to EDH Rec than if you looked at the larger sample, which is all Tapped Out. And, you know, there's no way for us to tell for sure why that is, but the most popular theory amongst, you know, our group is that EDH Rec users are more prone to use Marin. And the only reason why I can think that is because they're at the top of the ranking. So I think we do. And, you know, I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not, but
EDH Rec users also tend to be more among the enfranchised class, as Morrow would call it. And so, I mean, there are other reasons that might skew, not just because of EDH Rec.
Yeah, that's why I kind of prefaced it with like, it's kind of impossible to tell, right? So all I can say is that Marin in particular is more popular amongst EDH Rec users than other users. Or other people. So, you know, I think you can construe that in a number of different ways. You know, yeah, I think your theory is the one that I came up with, which was that the type of person that's checking EDH Rec is the type of player that would want to play Marin.
Right.
So.
Degenerate, soulless.
Conformist.
Hey. Yeah. She's shaman tribal.
She sure is.
All shamans all the time.
If you're willing to be a filthy net decker to use EDH Rec, then I guess you're willing to use Marin, I guess.
You know, you can A-B test it like Amazon does with its prices.
And like lie to people and say that another commander is more popular?
Yeah. Yeah. Just like a small subset of users just start showing them like Siddhar Kondo of Jamura is like number one. And then start seeing how many Siddhar decks you get.
Okay, for April Fools, I'll make some arbitrary commander. Let me pick one. I'll pick a Boros commander.
Yeah, no one uses those.
I'm going to make Kalemni.
Ooh.
Have a really high spike in popularity all of a sudden. And I'll have Jason write a blog post about how Kalemni's the best, you know, it's been overlooked and, you know, it's really strong and embodies the spirit of EDH, and we can see what the impact is.
You know, we can really get into this.
It could be like a little conspiracy.
Like you do a whole Kalemni takeover of the site.
Yeah.
And then if you want, we can do a podcast on Kalemni as well. And like Kalemni is now the number one commander.
Oh my God. This sounds like, let's do this. Honestly. and your listeners can be the only ones that know about it.
Excellent.
I mean, we could take this really far. Like I could probably rope in, like, you know, Tolarian Community College and Wedge on this.
Yeah, man.
Okay, and we can buy up all the Kalemni cards and then sell them. Because it's at 94 cents right now. If we get it to spike to like $3 or $4,
oh, can you imagine? We'd be dollar heirs.
I could retire.
Yeah, so we have the finance angle, we have the whole thing. Jason has to release a finance article as well. It'll be great.
Fantastic.
Like out of nowhere. All right. Okay, we're doing this. Listeners, don't tell anybody. No, I'm not going to ask Nick's Thack question about Kresh, how to make Kresh better without adding mana ramp. The answer is you don't. Hey, Henry Stukenborg, once again with a real question. Can we have accounts to hold our own saved searches or trend charts? Man. You sort of alluded to that with tapped out ownership.
Yep. So, all right. So, again, you know, I have to hesitate. I have to preface this with, like, we actually need to do the work, and it's on this long list of things we want to do. But so the articles, again, was the first step of making the deck more, or the website more interactive. And not really still, it's still not interactive, but, well, you can comment on the post, but it's adding some, like, human intelligence to the website and kind of trying to build a community around it. So one of the things that we want to do, and there's a whole slew of features that have user accounts as the kind of fundamental backbone to it. So there's like commenting on commanders, on cards, there's voting for cards, like tagging cards as a board wipe or tagging a card as like salt inducing. So there's like all kinds of things that we can do once we have user accounts done. But user accounts by themselves as like a prerequisite to all these things is like a significant undertaking, and it's just going to be a lot of work. So basically that is probably very close to the top of my list, is getting user accounts in here so that we can do safe searches. We can link up with your tapped out account and automatically bring your decks in. You can save commanders, and there's going to be a lot of cool things that open up once we get to that point. It's just, we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. I think last time you were like, you know, as long as nothing really complex comes up between now and then, we should have this done by the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, we saw how. Yeah, it was my worst nightmare. So,
somebody named Pahil Dukula writes, why no MTG Vault, and what about deck stats?
Ah, man.
This is us coming back to that topic.
Yeah. So, and I definitely treat tapped out better than deck stats, unfortunately. Like actually, unfortunately, deck stats right now, the recommendation for deck stats, I believe, is broken. I've gotten some people emailing me about that, so we need to fix that.
Yeah, because he still has a tab that says recommendations provided by EDH.
Yeah, so that's cool. You know, I mean, I like deck stats. And the problem is, so here's a couple of the problems. So the amount of website-specific code that goes into building a new integration is, like, pretty significant. So adding MTG Vault is like a serious amount of work, basically. You know, whenever something new comes up, like partners, for example, I'm going to have to handle that in different ways, you know, with each website and how they say that they're going to have that encoded and the data that they're sending me. So, you know, I guess my excuse is a bad one, which is, I don't know if it's a bad excuse, but I think the amount of work it takes to add a new integration for me has been hard to justify.
So Nicholas Jaragrulski, and this is definitely, he's pandering a bit to Sean, I'm sure. And of course it's of personal interest to us. More of a request, please add a Wheel of Planeswalkers page to the site.
A Wheel of Planeswalkers? What was that mean?
A Wheel of Planeswalkers. So again, Sean invented this game where we choose easy, medium, or hard. He, quote unquote, spins the wheel and then reads us an activated ability from a planeswalker. And based on that activated ability, the participants have to guess which planeswalker we're talking about. Speaking of looking into the cards.
So basically, this thing would show you the activated ability, and then you'd have to guess which commander it is, or which planeswalker it is.
Which planeswalker it is, yeah.
And that doesn't sound too hard. I'll think about it.
Yeah, it's right up. It's maybe number two to finishing off partner.
Well, I think that's a different website, right? That has nothing to do with EDH. But I'll slap some ads on it, and
bam.
Yeah. Like, you remember all the Hot or Not websites?
Yeah.
Those are super popular because, like, they killed ads, right? Because you just sit there and, like, just click through this thing, like, all day. And, I could make, like, maybe, like, $12.
Yeah. A month.
I could
That's some revenue there.
Buy 12 Calumnies in preparation.
12, yes. We need to buy up all the Calumnies, start the price spike. And then Jason can say, there's a buyout happening. This is kind of, you know, if there were laws about magic training, trading, this would be illegal. So listeners, don't tell anybody.
What if we caused the buyout just from our talking about it?
Well, then we sell them.
Well, we'll do a bait and switch. Like we're talking about Calumny right now, but we'll really do something else.
Yeah. All right. So as an aside, Nate, do you have any hateful cards here that you want to talk about to ruin Atraxa's day?
Oh, for Atraxa? If you're playing black, Thief of Blood or Aether Snap. And if you're playing green, Melira Silvac Outcast.
Well, that was fast.
Yep.
Yeah, those are good cards against Atraxa. Yeah, Atraxa's kind of the star of the week, of the month, of the year, it looks
forever,
like.
Yeah.
Heck, of all time, apparently. So before we wrap up, Donald, is there a way people can reach you that you prefer? And don't forget, this includes feedback about what people want from the site. Where should they send them?
Yeah, I think, so the couple of ways, I think, so there's an email link on edhrec.com towards the bottom. That's a great way to have longer conversations and allows me to keep track of things a little bit better. So that's probably my preferred, but I'm pretty responsive on Twitter and the Facebook page. So if those are more convenient for the users, then so be it.
On Twitter, it's at EDHREC, and then on Facebook, it's /EDHREC, right?
So on Facebook, it's /EDHREC1, because we made EDHREC and we messed it up, and I think we got locked out or something like that. So
that's funny. All right, and of course, we'll include links to both of these in the show notes.
Yeah.
And so another, it's a brand new question. So how do people, such as enterprising young or otherwise podcasters, get published on edhrec.com now?
Well, I would love to have you talk to our content manager about that.
And what's his name?
So Jason Ault, as you know. But in all seriousness, you know, I think we've obviously posted the articles on there so far, but you know, I would love to, you know, every time something was posted by somebody we like, you know, I see nothing wrong with passing that along on there.
Oh, that's sweet. If I understand you correctly, that's very sweet, sir. Yeah, we're happy to also do little companion deck lists and stuff like that as we talk
yeah,
about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no downside to it. And honestly, I'm serious. Like, talk to Jason about you know, having us be on top of like posting things when things are new and things like that. And then I think we could figure something out.
Well, right. Jason Ault will be receiving a deluge of listeners. I know he's also now working with Henry Stukenborg. We may have mentioned him once or twice this episode. Henry's a bright guy. He's a programmer who works for a very large company, and I'm certain you use their products. So he's offered to do a little bit of editing for Jason, I think, on the article level.
Nice.
Right. So, nice. Yeah, he was super excited, and he's like getting ready to generate a bunch of ideas too.
Cool.
So that was fun watching him say, "Oh my God, Jason accepted my offer."
Yeah, I mean, the amount of honestly, the article section of our website has gotten more attention than I expected it to. You know, there's lots of people coming out of the woodwork that want to work with us and see the opportunity here as kind of like as a critical mass of EDH players looking at things. So I'm really stoked, and Jason's doing a good enough job that I'm not as in the loop as I should be.
No, that's great. Like, you don't have to worry about that. It's just being taken
yep,
care of.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking the time to hang out with us. And, really, that's both to you, Donald, for coming on the show and our fantastic listeners. If you or any of our listeners want to support the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/commanderandmtg and just give us a buck a show. Hopefully by the time this airs, I will have added a $1 donation tier. And but if you do donate $10 or more per episode, Nate mentioned before, you can come join the patron chat community we host over on Facebook. Or, you know what, just give us a 5-star review on iTunes and this is definitely a modal choice, so choose one. Which would you choose, Donald? Don't answer that. We love our listeners. We love, and you know what? Our listeners, Donald, encourage us to bring on folks like you. I think you saw the tweets in the last few days being like, you know, asking all about when you were coming back on the show.
Yeah. I'm flattered.
Yeah, that was fun. Truthfully, it's hard to tell what listeners are paying direct attention to like that. But when we have three people going, hey, what about Donald? That's when it's like,
it's time.
Okay. And this time we went to our deck testers and our patrons, but sometimes we open it up to a few other folks. We love all our listeners, and we are incredibly grateful to all the patrons. Wow, I said that correctly. So come get your gratitude and influence, exactly like Jackie Miller. We mentioned her before. Andy Bentley, also mentioned before. And Graham Saulnier. This is the second time we've mentioned Graham now. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Mr. Nate Burgess. Our logo was created for the podcast by MrPicto.co.uk with assistance from Kelly. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin, of course, for his server space. We also have a few more tech whizzes and other folks who are going to be helping us out. Like, I think the video for this episode will have been created by Mr. Hunter Pruitt. You can reach us by going to our website, commander@mtg.com. Our email is cast@commander@mtg. You can find us on all the social media by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast, and individually on Twitter, I'm at Ketjack.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And do we have the final standings on the Crumpet Harvest?
Oh, he's in second. He finished in second place.
He finished in second place?
Yes, it was disappointing. It was right up to the minute. He had two bushels full under his garments and another half bushel, but he didn't quite finish the third bushel.
Oh, he was so hoping to beat his record and get three bushels.
Well, yeah, that's the record of the total province.
Yeah. Please send your condolences to @copain26. That's Sean's Twitter account. Also takes complaints about anything, not just magic, not just about crumpet harvesting. Complaints about life in general. I'm sure he'll be able to use your own sorrows to lift himself up for not winning the crumpet harvest. Donald, do you want to take us out? What a weird episode.
I'm still not sure if the crumpet thing is real or not.
No, it's real.
What's the American equivalent of that?
Nate is the expert on crumpet harvests.
Oh, it'd be the biscuits and gravy slop fest. They have that down in Alabama.
Oh, nice. Well, thanks for having me.
And that's our show with Donald Miner.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, thanks.
All right. Thank you, Donald. You have been an awesome sport once again.
This is a lot of fun. Thanks.
Commander.